and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad you are with us tonight. Our theme for this month has been, how do you teach multiple learners? Which it comes with a lot of different scenarios, but that's why we've been having different guests, because they come from different perspectives. And so we want you to be able to understand there's lots of different ways to teach multiple learners. And so we're glad that you are back for this last episode of September. And our special guest tonight is Leanne Garfus. Welcome, Leanne. So excited to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Peggy. Thanks.
Yeah. So Leanne has a lot of resources, and I'm going to have her share those with us as we get started, as she talks about her story. But I first want to start by thanking Bookshark for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. If you want to learn more about Bookshark, you can visit them at bookshark.com. And about halfway through, we're going to hear from them as to just what they do and how they may be able to help you with your homeschooling. So, and I see we are already getting comments in on our YouTube channel. Cassie says, long time no see. I know, I was gone last week. So thank you for coming back. I actually did two episodes a week before. So, we'll be back on Tuesday nights now again for a while. So welcome back. And if you're watching live, we just want you to know that you can put your comments, your questions in the feed, whether you're watching on YouTube, on Periscope, or on Facebook. So we would love for you to be part of our conversation. So Leanne, as we're getting started, I would just love for you to share a little bit about yourself, your family, and your homeschooling journey, just so our viewers can get to know who you are and a little bit about you.
Thanks. I am a second generation homeschooler. I was homeschooled back in the late 80s and early 90s when homeschooling was still a little wild and crazy and no one had ever heard of it. And I was homeschooled in Michigan, which was a really dangerous place to homeschool. So we did literally homeschool in the basement. We had a pretend name for our school and tried not to talk about homeschooling so our parents wouldn't get arrested or anything.
Right.
So it's really strange homeschooling now when it's just the opposite, especially here in Texas. There are literally no rules. And if someone asks your children, why aren't they in school? And they say, oh, because I'm homeschooled. Then they'll say back, oh, yeah, my neighbor's homeschool, or three kids in my neighborhood homeschool. So it's just so common. It's like saying, you know, what public school you are, practically. It's that common down here.
Almost.
So I have six children, from 24 to 10-year-old twins. Three of my children are graduates already, and they live nearby, so that's lots of fun. I have a 14-year-old that's just starting high school, and then my 10-year-old twins, who are different learners because they were adopted from foster care.
So, yeah, it gives you a lot of experience. So you've been homeschooling, what, 21 years, I think I heard you say?
That's correct.
Yeah. So that gives you a lot of experience. And also, being homeschooled yourself, it gives you a different perspective of being a student, which I think is awesome. And I'm excited to hear just the information you have to share with us. And I love that you shared that homeschooling wasn't so free, because I think we think it's always been this free, and that people didn't have to fight for that. And it's important that we know that homeschooling in the United States was illegal in most states in the 80s. And there was a lot of people that fought for our freedoms. And so we got to spend a lot of time with those people this last week, Leanne and I did. And it's so inspiring to be around those people that were at the forefront of this homeschool movement. So we're going to get into some questions as we move along, but and Kazu, I'll get to your question in just a second, but I'm going to ask Leanne a question first, and then we'll fill that in. But I just would love to know from you, Leanne, what are some ways that homeschooling multiple learners has not been easy for you? And what kind of lessons have you learned along the way through your homeschooling journey?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me before what's been hard about it. Everyone asks, do you have tips? And you have to try to say, oh yeah, this is the good parts about it. But no one's ever asked, what are the bad parts? But it can be crazy. For a couple of years, I had children in all levels. I had a couple high schoolers, I had a middle schooler, I had a few elementary students. Mm-hmm. So that was actually the best time of my homeschooling. It seems like it would be the most hectic, but it was actually the most fun. I think because there was so much going on in my homeschool that I already knew I'm not going to keep up with everything. So I took the pressure off myself right away and said, that's okay. We're just going to let this go. And instead, I did focus more on what can we do together and how can my younger students learn from my older students? So to go back to your question, I think the hardest part of homeschooling multiple children is thinking the opposite, that we need to keep up with each of them separate. And there is some truth to that. You want your high schooler doing high school level math. You want to really help your younger children learn how to read. You have different levels of science, different literature they need to read at their own levels. So there are a lot of things. There's also a misconception on the other side that you can just teach everybody together. But you do need to stay very separate. So I think that is the hard part, is figuring out that balance for yourself. There are a lot of experts and even curriculum that wants to tell you this is how you're going to teach multiple learners. But that's not necessarily true for you, right, Peggy? Everyone needs to find what works best with their own culture. All of our children are unique in their learning, whether they're gifted or whether they have learning disabilities, whether they love to learn independently or they really need handholding. They want to be active. They need quiet. I mean, every single child has their own things. So that's another challenge that we face, is how do we accommodate so many personalities and learning styles and temperaments and abilities? So that would be another one of the challenges that I face. And I think the third challenge is dealing with the noise and chaos. If you have only one child at a time, you can just contain everything to one table. But you have lots of people, then there's quarreling over table space. That happens a lot with us. Everyone wants to use the same table, even though there's other tables in the house. For some reason, they all want to use the same table. So table space, room space, noise. I want it to be quiet in here while I'm sitting in my favorite chair. Well, we're going to be teaching. If you moved somewhere else, then it would be quiet. But I want to sit in this chair. So things like that, there's a little bit of give and take. So that would be the third difficulty, I think.
Yeah. So how have you navigated around those things with your kids?
A lot of saying, get over it. I think teaching multiple students is just another aspect of living in a larger family. There are, and sometimes when we are adults, we can kind of tell some other adults were only children. There's just something about the way they relate to others or what they automatically expect in a conversation or in a working environment, which is both good and bad. It has drawbacks and it has a lot of pros because they're very high achieving usually and they really are driven and achieve a lot. They do a lot of great and we can learn a lot from only children. So I don't want to say that I'm disparaging that at all. But those who have grown up in a larger family, they learn some out of necessity, collaboration, compromise, high tolerance for noise and discomfort. There are some of these things that are natural rules that we need to learn anyway. Yeah. So allowing our children in those chaotic situations, allowing them a choice. Okay, you can sit in your favorite chair while I'm teaching your brother how to read, or if you want quiet, you can go lay on your bed while you do your work. So you make the choice. Right. So teaching them to make choices and give something up for what they want. Also teaching them patience with each other. Yes. That's really hard too, because it's easy to become impatient in a lesson that they're doing together. Impatient with their questions, or I have a son actually who is who is impatient with the feedback that or the input that his younger siblings has. They all discuss history together. Mm-hmm. But they've read different books. They've learned on their own levels and they have their own unique perspectives because of the different materials they've used.
Right.
So my older son, when he's discussing history, you know, he is, I love him very much, but he's a know-it-all. And it's a problem because everything he reads, he remembers. He has an amazing memory. So when someone else wants to tell the story from their perspective or what they think happened during that historic event, he has no patience to listen to it. He has no patience because he has all the details and his way is the only way of looking at it. So this is another lesson that he's learning and that I really want to work on with him. It's more important than him listening to someone else's opinion of the War of 1812. More important than that is his learning to respect others' time, to respect others' opinions, and to listen to people younger than yourself.
Right.
That's kind of an important but difficult lesson for homeschool students, I think. They want to respect their older siblings to a certain extent and their parents and other authorities, but waiting and respecting siblings that are younger is a harder lesson, but really key to working together.
Our older students can get really frustrated. And I think I've even heard from parents too, you know, they feel like, especially if they have a child with a disability and they're bringing those siblings along, that they're almost at a disadvantage for that older student. But from your perspective, you know, and just what you've been sharing, that's a good advantage. It's preparing them with lessons that we can't fabricate in a textbook. Those are things that just, you know, you choose A or B. Both of them are going to hurt. Sorry, that's just the way it is. Instead of, you know, well, you either can take the you know, discomfort or you can just get out of it. And unfortunately, I think we want that get out of it for our kids too much because it doesn't prepare them for some things in life. So yeah, love that. And just the whole thing with learning to listen. I mean, we look at job skills, you know, later on in life, and that's an advantage to be able to listen to other people's opinions and be able to synthesize that into what you're thinking, whether they're younger or older. I think we live in a society where I have my opinion, and if you don't agree with me, then I'm not going to agree with you, instead of learning to listen and compromise and see things from other people's points of view. So
job skills is a really great way of looking at that. Peggy, I got to talk with you a little bit when we met last week about my new diagnosis of learning issues in one of my children. And I, for our new friends who are listening that don't know me as well, my older four children, my bio children, were exceptional learners on the other end of the spectrum. They're very independent. They don't need to have things explained very much. They're quick learners. So it was relatively easy. I had different problems with them than I do with my two children who were adopted, didn't grow up for those first critical years, didn't grow up having their little brains nurtured properly. So they missed a lot of development that they needed. And even now I've had them for 4 years, there's just no catching up on some things I'm learning. So to go back to your job skills thing, I look into their future. And of course, we don't know what God's going to do in their future or how, you know, they might take off in a few years in their abilities. But looking, you know, if you extrapolate from their current progress, I think they're not going to get scholarships to private universities like their siblings did. What are we going to do with them? How can I prepare them for a different future than I'm accustomed to preparing for when I was a student and helping my other students? But I love what you said about job skills. They are learning job skills by learning how to learn at their own pace, by learning to listen to other people mm-hmm. and understand what they're saying and apply that to their lives by right. learning how to learn not only from their mother helping them, mm-hmm. but also from other people, from siblings who will later be like colleagues around them.
Right.
So yeah. I like how you said that, that it mm-hmm. is an important job skill they're learning, that no matter what they choose, what trade or what occupation they go into, mm-hmm. this just experience of learning in a group of various personalities mm-hmm. is going to really help prepare them for whatever God has for them.
Yes. Yeah. No member of your family is ever a mistake. You know, that it all works together for good. It may be frustrating. And I love how you said, you know, at the beginning of our conversation that you just had to realize it's just not going to happen the way that you always want it to. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how, for moms that have that difficulty with that mental shift of this is what school should be like. This is, you know, I was on the phone today with a mom who said, you know, I do morning time and we do this. And she was basically copying what her son's program in the Montessori school did. And she goes, but he screams through the whole thing and he doesn't like it. And I'm trying to convince her, you know, well, why don't you try things that he does like and try things until you find what he likes? And she's like, oh, I can do that. but that shift, that mental shift it takes to let go of those ideals and move to the other. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'm used to my children progressing at a certain rate mm-hmm. and learning in a certain way. And I, as a mom of so many, I think I was duped a little bit by my first children because they each did learn differently. Mm-hmm. They have their own learning preferences. They have their own learning environments. They have their own different strengths and weaknesses right. academically. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, wow, I've learned a lot from these four. I have four different, completely different people, and I've mm-hmm. helped them. Three of them become, you know, productive members of society and one well on his way. And I'm feeling good about myself. I've got this homeschool thing down. Not only that, but I teach people how to homeschool. So
right.
I felt like I knew it all and I was ready to teach it all to other people. And mm-hmm. then my two twins, they came into our home when they were 6 years old, about first grade-ish. Okay. And they were a little bit quote unquote behind, which I hate that, but they were definitely not at the same level that I would expect a 6 year old to be at for that kind of learning. So, mm-hmm. you know, all optimistic. I start over with basically preschool and kindergarten material with them and thinking this is great. I'm going to quote unquote, I'm again using all the wrong words, but catch them up to where oh, yes. I thought they should be, let alone what a school thought they should be. And it didn't work. Mm. I kept moving them along because right. that's yeah. what I do. I move people along and it wasn't working. By the time they got into what we would consider third or fourth grade material, that's when all of a sudden, finally, I noticed this is not working.
Yeah.
It's, and it got to be in math. It was, I just remember the day we were working on multiplication facts and just all of a sudden it dawned on me, we've been working on these multiplication facts for months and I really haven't gone anywhere. Something is wrong here. And it took me entirely too long to realize it because again, I just chug along in my routine and things were going great, I thought. And then I looked ahead at what the next level of that curriculum was going to be like for them.
Right.
And suddenly, instead of just doing worksheets that were laid out for them with pictures and clear explanations of every problem they were going to do, suddenly the curriculum expected them to copy down the work on their own piece of paper, figure it out themselves after reading just a short lesson and some examples. So it took a lot. I realized when I looked at it, they have to read words, understand what those words meant in real life, decode those into numbers, copy down what it is that they saw on a piece of paper. Imagine what steps it took to solve that problem. Try to figure out what that problem meant in real life. Write down something, look back at it and decide, does this even have anything to do with the original problem I had? And I said, there is no way their little brains can do all those steps. I never considered that before with my other children. And I wish I had. And I wish that I could explain this to every mom, but every mom I get a chance to that says my kid is really struggling in grammar, or my child can't spell, or my child can't do his math. I say, let's stop and look back at the last assignment you gave him and go through every single thing that child's brain had to do to get to the answer. And when the parent does that, when the mom does that, when I do that, when I can't figure out while they're stuck, I realize, oh my goodness, I'm expecting them to do 10 or 12 mental things, plus different physical things, whether it's getting your piece of paper, drawing a picture, writing things, figuring out how to spell it before you write it. I mean, there's all these different things a child has to do. And when they're in elementary school and they seem like they're, again, quote unquote, behind, it seems to me that in many of the moms that I talk to, and when I'm looking at my own twins who each have different learning issues, I'm seeing it's usually because there's one or two or five of those steps that are too hard. So it seems like they're ready because we're like, oh yeah, they can copy it down and they know how to multiply those numbers already. Yes. But do they know how to understand what they're copying? Do they understand? Is it hard for them to write letters, or are they hesitant to want to write? I mean, there's all these other steps that are going on that often show, wait a minute, that's the problem. So when that happened to me, Peggy, I said, how can I eliminate some of these steps? I said, I don't want my child copying down the work before he does it. That's an unnecessary step. He can learn without practicing copying things.
Right.
But that would be a mental hindrance to him because all he's going to do is look at it and say, oh, and turn his brain off. Then his brain will turn off before he even gets to it. So I need to eliminate the copying. I need to eliminate the long lessons, because if their paper, I said, if his paper takes 20 minutes, that's too long for him.
Right.
He needs to be able to do even shorter than what we might think is developmentally normal, because he's a little bit of a different learner. So take him back. He needs to be able to finish his assignments in 5 minutes, or he has mental fatigue. And that's okay for him. That's just who he is. And he'll get better mental strength as he gets older. So just taking those different things into consideration, I looked back and said, I have to throw out all my curriculum I saved for him. I have to start over and find something that's easier to use. Now, I'm a big proponent, Peggy, that that curriculum doesn't teach students, moms teach students. So I've often said you can use any curriculum, just use it your own way, the way the child learns, and that can be a tool that you use. However, there are some tools that are harder to use than others. And I looked at the curriculum I had and I thought, I could, you know, adapt this, but it's going to take me too long and just be too hard. And I want something that's easier for me.
Time and money. Yes.
So I started over again with a new curriculum. And what was funny is the author of that curriculum was at this event that Peggy and I met at last week. And so I ran up to him to thank him because he changed my son's view of math and made it possible for us to move past multiplication facts and actually keep going in his learning. And when I'm trying to tell him this, another mom was already talking to him, saying the exact same words, like the exact same thing.
That
so it was so wonderful that it's not just a one mom thing. I think this is for lots of us with different learners, that there are, there's so much we can do if we stop and think, what is my child trying to do here?
Exactly. It was probably Steve Demme, wasn't it?
Yes.
So Steve is the chairman of the board of directors for SPED Homeschool. So, so I work with Steve a lot. He's very fun. And we love his programs. So That's a really good way to put it. We can adapt, we can change, but there's a certain point where we're going to be up all night changing and tweaking things, and we really need to sleep. Yeah, we covered that. So, and people have, you know, just the amount of time it takes to generate ideas. And, but I do love what you said about breaking that down. I've never heard anybody so succinctly say that, you know, take it in the steps, because that's what special ed teachers do. They break things down into steps and then figure out, it's called scaffolding. How much support does a child need for every single step? And I love too that you said, Leanne, just take some out. You know, whatever your child doesn't need to do, if you're not working in that, you know, I've heard speakers say many times, why is your child taking the test at the end of the unit if you already know what they know? Mm-hmm. But there's other things, smaller things that we tend to look over, and we look at it as one process, but it's a set of multiple processes like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. That's so important to remember.
There are so many ways we can do this in creative ways besides changing. We can change curriculum. We can change the mm-hmm. way they learn, like if they can learn on the computer with videos better than mm-hmm. or if they learn better hands-on, or if they mm-hmm. learn better by looking at a book. Some kids actually do learn. I have a child that can only learn by reading a book. It's so weird. Mm. But other things we can do is by tweaking almost any subjects that they have, even just individual assignments. Someone told me the other day, why make a high schooler read every single great novel when most of them he's never going to quote? But some of them, if you want them to know the story, to be familiar with it, because so much literature references other stories, then mm-hmm. why not get them a comic book or a movie about it, so at least they're familiar with the story? Rocked my world, because I was totally like, oh no, everyone has to read the original documents of everything they're doing. Absolutely not. So I went out and got a manga comic book of Sense and Sensibility for my son to read. No high school boy is going to say, oh, I'm so glad I read Sense and Sensibility. Absolutely not.
No.
But his mom let him read a comic book. No, it's thick. I couldn't believe how thick this was.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But this thick comic book for literature, he was so thrilled. Now he's not going to complain about it at all. So we can make all kinds of tweaks to make things. Mm-hmm. And at first, we might feel like, oh, I'm cheating my child out of an education. Well, go back and say, what was the point? Is the point for him to read beautiful literature? Well, he does that when he reads E.B. White, or when he reads other authors that he really loves, or Dickens or others that really appeal to him. But it was the point of Sense and Sensibility was just for him to get used to this romantic style of story. So why not look at that in a comic book and then move on to other literature?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's back to, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the whole mix when you've got multiple kids, I mean, just evaluating all of that. I'd love to hit a couple questions before we hit our mid break. But Jennifer had said to us that, yes, she said you were homeschooled. It was illegal in Texas. I homeschooled my son during that Wild West time, because we were talking about homeschooling in the 80s. Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty crazy. And then Michelle said, I know what you mean about that mental shift. I started homeschooling my boys this year, and I find myself thinking the old way instead of coming up with their own routine.
That is so hard, Michelle. I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. I started off again this year with my routine all written out for them on the wipe off board, and brand new chore charts and assignment charts that I ordered personalized for them specially. Sure enough, the first week it wasn't working for anybody, and they were almost in tears, and I had to step back and say, why isn't this working? Why isn't everyone following my routine?
Right.
And it took me actually like a couple weeks to realize, wait, it's not their fault. It's really mine. I need to go back to doing it their way, just like Michelle said.
Yeah, that's so true. And this is a really good question, because I think some people talk have asked about this, and it's different in every state, I know, but the legality of homeschooling foster children. Can you talk a little bit? I know your perspective is from Texas. Were you homeschooling when they were foster or yes, just after adoption?
We were already homeschooling our bio kids when they came into our home. And we did adopt through foster care, which I strongly recommend in almost every state. In the United States, it's free. And mm-hmm. you can take advantage of many other resources and right. helps for your children. So mm-hmm. That barrier to adoption is eliminated. Yeah. But most states will allow you to homeschool foster mm-hmm. children. You have to get permission, but it's really easy. Like, yeah. it's just, is it okay if they homeschool? Yes, sure. Some mm-hmm. states, the caseworkers might want to see a little bit of their work or mm-hmm. know what it is you're doing just because it's their job to ensure the child is being cared for. So right. it's not like this horrible, oversight thing, but rather just another way they're caring for the children. Yeah. When our children were placed with us, it was with the stipulation that they must stay in public school. Mm-hmm. So they did for about 6 months and then for the first semester of their first grade year. They were placed right before their first grade year and they attended mm-hmm. one semester of first grade. And then their adoption was held up over some technicalities. So I went to the caseworkers and actually wrote something down for them so she could show it to her supervisors that, hey, I want to homeschool them. You already know that when they're adopted, that mm-hmm. it's a foregone conclusion. They're going to be adopted. They will be homeschooled. So mm-hmm. this is part of the continuity of life. Furthermore, mm-hmm. they're being separated from their siblings by not being allowed to participate in something the rest of the family does. So by expressing all of that, they said, oh, yeah, that's sure. great. In order to care for them best, they need to be homeschooled like the rest mm-hmm. of their family. So that really helped me. So that's what mm-hmm. I suggest. If you're not able to homeschool, don't let that keep you from getting the child. Get the child in your home as soon mm-hmm. as you can. And then after you've demonstrated a good care for them, they'll yeah. usually work with you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. You're under observation during that adoption time. And as you get better relationships with those caseworkers and the guardian ad litem that works with the children, mm-hmm. They tend to go to bat for you and advocate with you. So, mm-hmm. so I completely agree with Leanne. I have 10 adopted siblings. So, I've seen my parents go through that and my parents homeschool my siblings. So yeah, we have more questions, comments, but we definitely have to take a break. We're going to come back to those right when we come back before we dive into some more questions. So if you have anything else that you want to ask Leanne or comment about, we'll get to those once we get back. So Leanne, I'm going to give you a quick break and we're going to hear a little bit from Bookshark. So I'm going to bring up Bookshark here and let you know a little bit about them. So and I get hit that too. Okay. So one of the Bookshark users said, Bookshark was the best thing I've done for myself and my kids. That's what Dana said. And Tracy said, I definitely regret not starting Bookshark sooner. It's been such a great fit for our family. Well, we at Sped Homeschool agree. Wondering how you can jump onto the Bookshark wagon as well. Start by heading to bookshark.com. On the Bookshark website, you can request a free catalog, download samples, and see the scope and sequence charts of what they teach at each level. There's also a blog at bookshark.com/blog with hundreds of articles written by dozens of authors. Bookshark site just has so much free information on how to teach your kids, whether you use Bookshark or not. Another great example is you get a free unit study each year, and you can try out the Bookshark way of literature-based learning at bookshark.com/freebies. This new unit for 2021 is about volcanoes. And also, let me share just a couple more quotes. Jill says, we switched to Bookshark Language Arts this year. This was the best decision ever. We love how everything ties together. Can't tell you how grateful I am for Bookshark. We're looking forward to adding more subjects next year. And Catherine says, pulling my kids out of public school and getting Bookshark's full program saved our sanity. It's the best parenting decision I've made. We are so much happier now versus the kids staring lifelessly at screens all day. This open and go component and high quality literature for science, history, and language arts is amazing. You can see if Bookshark is a best fit for you and your family, just like these moms. You can visit bookshark.com, get the catalog, and if you put /freebies, you can get the free unit study as well. So thank you, Bookshark, for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And I'm going to bring Leanne back, and we're going to start with some comments and questions from our viewers. And so let me hide that ticker. Okay. Got some technical issues tonight. It's just me. I think I haven't got enough sleep yet. We were talking before we started the break about, you know, rechanging your mindset. And Michelle says that after homeschooling starting this year, she changes her mind every month. That's pretty typical when you first get started. It's okay, Michelle. You'll get into the groove and you'll find out when you're out of the groove. Just like Leanne said, oh, I realized 3 weeks later, that's why it's not working.
I love Michelle. We need to have coffee.
And then we have another question from one of our YouTube viewers. She says, I'm new to homeschooling. I'll be assisting my two children who are on the spectrum, ages 5 and 9. Any tips for me? I'll be adding a third child who is on the spectrum starting next year. So
Peggy probably has much better advice on this than I do, because like I said, I had exceptional learners for my three who are graduates in my high school now. Mm-hmm. I am just figuring out with my 10-year-old twins how to work with students with learning disabilities. And I don't have any experience with children on the autism spectrum, which I know have really unique abilities. Do you have some great ideas, Peggy?
Well, you know, all three of mine are on the spectrum, so I totally get where you're at. Yeah, that's it. It's different. So diagnoses, this is something that we tell parents when they come to our, Michelle gives you a heart, by the way. A child can have the same diagnoses and they can be very different. So saying that this curriculum worked for me, try it. I'd say try it, but don't think that this is going to be your solution. Because depending on your teaching style, mom, it has a lot to do with that. But kids on the spectrum tend to be highly focused children. Their brains are explained that they are like a freight train and they move in one direction. They're hyper focused. And if you have a lot of transitions and things that you have to move your child to and from, so quick, let's do this workbook for 5 minutes and this workbook for 5 minutes, you're not going to get very good results. What you need to do is dive into something deep with these kids, make it active, and allow them to follow rabbit trails and realize that learning is something that you do when you just experience something and learn from the experience, instead of it's a bunch of little tasks that we do all day. You're going to get a lot of meltdowns doing that. Unit studies, I highly recommend. So look into those first, see how they work and how. There's a lot of different unit studies out there. Some have more parent prep ahead than others. So I tend to be the person who doesn't read the instructions when I make recipes. So I got the ones without the instructions. But I know for most people that does not work. So just a little bit of advice there. So I want to dive into one more question, and then we're going to head back to our other topics, because I know we're talking about teaching multiple learners and I don't want to go off of that too much. But we'll try to fit in some of these other questions that you guys have as well. But one of our viewers says, we don't do half of what our history says to do. We still give in what we need. I love that I can choose how I teach it.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm assuming you do that a lot, yes. Leanne.
Yeah, of course. With my first couple, it was like, answer every single problem, read every single chapter of every single book. Right. And then my third child just kind of moved around that when he was in high school and did the little he needed in order to learn the material and just move on. And so now I'm more like, you know what? It worked for him. Just, you know, skim this. As long as you know the basic gist, that's probably all you need to know.
That's funny. Because, you know, they say that about, you know, like your kids, when you have the firstborn, everything has to be perfect. You know, you sterilize the pacifier and all of that. And by the third one, you just pick it off the floor, wipe it on your arm. And so you do the same with, thing with homeschooling. By the time you get to the third, you're okay.
Yes, it doesn't even matter anymore. They've worn you down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's too funny. So, you know, what's your favorite advice to give families for teaching multiple students who are different ages and different abilities?
Wow. I think first of all is just change your expectations.
Mm.
It's not going to look, if you usually when you're teaching multiple children, you started off with only one at a time or
Yeah.
two at a time. If you're really ambitious with the whole twinning thing, but
Right.
You only started with one or two and then you're gradually adding them and you have your homeschool a certain way when you're first starting out and you might be skipping merrily through the fields or reading all these amazing books on the sofa with hot chocolate, but you keep adding more and someone is kicking you in the face and spilling your hot chocolate and ripping up the books and you can't find the pencils and it just gets worse and worse the more
Right.
children you add to it. So you have to give up that whole idealistic picture you have of what homeschooling multiple children is going to be like. And you have to
Very
quit
good.
looking on Instagram and Pinterest. It used to be
Yes.
Pinterest was the enemy, and now Instagram is becoming just
Oh,
as
yeah.
bad. Your morning basket time, if you have a morning basket. I have a morning pile of things next to my chair that is all messed up and I've lost things. So I have the morning pile, but it's not going to happen. There are some days I get partially through it and I'm like, nobody is learning anything because one of my children's attitude is so bad. It's spreading rapidly through the house. So you have to just give it up. The whole idea that we have of teaching multiple children is that it's going to be this beautiful time of the older children helping the younger children and everybody discussing all together. That happens like rarely. We have to look at that as a treat, like dessert. We don't have it every single day and
Oh, I
definitely
love
not
it.
every single
Yeah.
meal. So it's not going to happen every subject, not going to happen every day. Once in a blue moon, the stars will align, but we have to just give it up and realize I'm going to do what each child needs, but even more, I'm going to do what each day demands. So that might mean a day of just concentrating on one thing with one child. It might be a day of just tending to sick children. With someone mentioned something about teaching a child with ODD over in the comments. It might just mean meeting your special need or your spectrum child's needs and not even paying attention to everything else. No matter what your special need is, this mom dealing with a child with ODD, the advice I would give you, most of all is that your child, if you don't know what that is, it's oppositional defiant disorder. It's common in children from foster care or other traumatic situations. And my children don't have ODD, but one of my children has an impulse disorder that can sometimes look very similar to ODD. So I understand that the most important thing you can do, and Peggy was talking about this with me last week too, is remember our relationship with our child and our child's character is the most important thing we're teaching. And this is true for all of us teaching multiple children. When our child needs care, our child is maybe acting up because they need something, which is usually the reason they're acting up. They're acting up because they need help with their sensory issues. They're acting up because they need help with their learning issues and they don't know how to express that. They're acting up because they have trauma that they're dealing with that they're trapped in. But that is what we're teaching our children is how to survive. And
So
then
true.
after how to survive, we're teaching them how to thrive, how to manage their own abilities and disabilities to learn. Then maybe we'll teach algebra, but maybe not. That's another thing that we're giving up is that look, is that attitude that my high school is going to look a certain way because their career is going or their college future is going to be a certain way. whether we're teaching multiple children or not. And definitely if we're teaching a different kind of learner or a different kind of emotional and mental abilities, giving up those preconceived notions and putting it aside. That's the biggest lesson I've been learning, Peggy, the last couple of years is that even if things seem to be trucking along for a little while, as things come bubble up to the surface, which I'm hearing is common with lots of special needs, it just bubbles up more and more things all the time. And that means some days, some weeks, some months, we don't do anything that looks like homeschooling to other people.
Right. Yeah. That's and being okay with that perspective that it doesn't have to look good to other people. It's what's best for my child. It's what's best for our family. And I just remember telling people, you know, that the just so my boys would not kill each other was the best lesson we learned in our house. You know, because as they get to be adults, that's what you want to be over above all other things. And yes, the reading, the writing, the math, that all comes in its own pace. But we don't have those basic things. And, you know, especially when you have kids who are adopted and out of foster care, you have a lot of things that, you know, just safety, that they're not going to be learning if they don't feel safe, if they don't feel like this is an environment where I'm loved. And that takes a lot of groundwork, just working on those things.
And like Kira Seuss is dealing with, those who are dealing with ODD or extreme autism or other things that are causing harmful behavior, some kinds of mental illness that are causing harmful behavior, it's helping the child feel safe and also keeping the rest of the family safe. So dealing with all of that can take, it doesn't only take that child away from their studies, but it might take other seemingly more healthy children away from their studies too. And we have to be okay with that. We have to realize that this is God's plan for our family, and God's plan for our family may be learning safety and dealing with that for all of us this year.
Well, I have one person says, breathing a sigh of relief. Thank you. Yes, we're going to speak, you know, just there, like you said, Leanne, there's so many pictures, there's so many images of this is the perfect homeschool life. And I'm sorry, but it's nice to be able to share that that doesn't happen. I mean, those are those little images that we can catch once in a blue moon and then post them on, you know, Instagram and Facebook and look at us, but it's not the norm. It just isn't. And I love your pile, because that's kind of how mine has always worked, you know, or just shove it in the cupboard and shut the door. Yes. So my kids had bins and was like, how much can we dump in those? And then by, you know, the middle of the year, it's like, what else do you have in there? Because none of your school stuff fits anymore.
Right. It's socks and toys and trash. I don't know why there's trash there.
So yeah, it's, yeah. And then, Cake by Lacey. So thank you very much. You are welcome. You know, there's a lot of good resources on our website at spedhomeschool.com as far as, on autism. And I think we actually focused on that for an entire month, not long ago. So you may want to look back on our YouTube channel for some of those interviews as well. There's was some really good advice from people I had on. People like Leanne who know a lot, and I learn something new every time that I do these interviews. So Leanne, I would just love, what encouragement do you have for families who still have a long homeschooling road ahead in regards to navigating change, homeschooling through difficulties, and preparing students for graduation and beyond? I think it can seem kind of daunting.
Yeah, it can. And it's funny because we, about a year after our children were placed in our home, our newest children, the foster adopted kids, I turned to my husband and said, what was I thinking? We were so close to being done homeschooling, and I just extended my prison sentence. And it's true. I literally didn't think about it, Peggy, which is good that God didn't put that in my mind, because they might not have been adopted if I stopped and counted the years. So I know that feeling that it seems like it's going to last a long time. When I'm done, I will have taught for 30 years or more. Oh my gosh. I don't even want to think about that. I'm not even that old, Peggy.
I am, and I'm ready to be done after this year.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe it. So the question was something about homeschooling for a long time, and then my mind went numb.
Just what encouragement do you have? For if you're looking that far out, how do you reframe that?
How do I reframe that? Well, for one thing, I'm stuck, so there's nothing else. I think I've gotten some encouragement out of the fact that I do have three grads, and I wish I could give a glimpse of that to other moms, because I do remember those years when I had four under 10 and was trying to homeschool, most of them, it was really hard work and very exhausting. And I wasn't making it as easy as I should have, Peggy. I was putting way too much on my kids and on myself, but I do remember what that's like. And it didn't necessarily get easier. I just learned more strategies and developed a wider and wider circle of support, which makes a lot like you are to so many moms. But having milestones and celebrating those milestones is really important. My kids graduated and that's a big deal for them, but it's important for us as moms to stop and think, wait a minute, I got one done. I did this, and look back and say, I really taught him almost everything he knows. That it worked. I actually did this. But no matter what milestone you're next to, I taught my kid to read. He did not know what letters meant. He didn't know what these marks on a piece of paper meant. And now they mean something because I taught him that. And celebrate when you... We celebrate these things for the kid. He's happy he learned how to read. He's happy he learned how to do long division. He's happy he learned how to solve his first algebra problem. But we as moms need to stop and celebrate. Oh my word, I got my child through his first algebra test. Whether or not you taught it or you made, or he did a video lesson or he took a DVD, I facilitated that. It was because I was his homeschool mom. I prayed for him. I gave him the resources. I supported him. And now this happened. So I think that's the way to keep going, Peggy, is to realize what we're doing. We think, and it's right, God has given me these children. I'm raising them up for the future. God is using me in their lives. Yes, all of that is very true. And there are tangible things going on too. We need to make sure we celebrate the tangible things and realize this happened, Mom, because you did it. Did it. Give yourself a sticker. Text your friend. Put it on Facebook. I taught my child how to do long division. Celebrate that. It's not just the child's. That really is something for you to celebrate. And you're going to keep having those celebrations all through your homeschool journey. And it's that will help you go all the way to the end.
Yeah, because I think we only look at the end. And that's not, it's so far off that it just, we don't have the encouragement or enough drive to get, you know, that far, but it's those little steps. And if we can, you know, if we can look at this, you know, huge thing that we have to climb, but if we only look at the next step, it doesn't seem that bad.
Right.
I love that advice because it is so important that we don't, we don't thank ourselves before we get started. And sometimes those little things are like, my child ate with a fork today. Celebrate it.
For our special needs kids. Absolutely. There's so much. My child sat still. We literally celebrated. My child did not yell today. During this 1 hour. Now he did later. But my child did not yell during that 1 hour we spent homeschooling. And we celebrated. We made a big deal about it to him. You did it. You lasted a whole hour. And then, you know, he went and did his own thing. And I'm like, I did it. I facilitated this in his life. Now he makes his own choices, but I helped make it easier for him to do the right thing. So celebrate your special needs milestones as well.
So important. So got another question. Creative Minds Homeschooling. I'll come back to your question at the end because I want to answer that personally. Simply Me, Laura D. on YouTube asks, looking to start homeschooling my 12-year-old daughter, autistic, development delayed, have no clue where to start, currently full-time at home, have one-year-old too. How do I squeeze it all in?
I love that question. You don't. Sorry very much, Laura, but not everything is going to be squeezed in. So the first thing is that I tell all working moms is to find out what it is you can let go. And that is really important. We have this idea that we want to do it all. And that's a God-given desire we have to do all we can to use our own talents and giftings and to do everything we can for our family. Yeah. But we're not supposed to be God for them. So sit down. I would really encourage you, Laura, to sit down and write down everything that you see filling up your time and your efforts, and then get a pen and see what you can cross off or you can give to someone else, because that is the first thing. And the second thing is limit your homeschooling. Yep. Not everyone thinks of that, but you need to have a hard stop. We have a hard stop at noon. We will homeschool from whenever we can get started in the morning, which is usually around 9:30-ish. We will homeschool until noon, and we stop wherever we are, even if it's in the middle of a lesson. We're done. It's lunchtime. Yep. We don't want to prolong this. Homeschooling will always be there tomorrow or next month when things settle down and you're ready for the next part of it. So that's my two pieces of advice. Get rid of some things in your life and have a hard stop so you don't let things get out of control.
And she says on top of that, you know, she seems to listen better to teachers in school than to me. You know, I caught the preview of Homeschool Rocked. It's a movie that's going to be coming out soon. Mm-hmm. And the basic message is our system has taught our children that parents don't know anything.
Yes.
You've got to reframe that in your house. Did you have any trouble with that with your twins at all?
No, they do have reactive attachment disorder, which is slightly different. They're working on what is proper attachment. But because they were so young, they weren't really at the questioning age that you get in preteens. But here's another thing is, Laura, part of this, yes, part of it is from being in school, and part of it also is the age. Mm-hmm. Your child has this God-given growth into independence, which they don't know how to do respectfully. But it's part of just becoming an adult. She's not always going to be at home. She's not always going to be listening to you for every little thing in her life. So it's part of growing up that she has this God-given desire to be independent. And we forget that it's actually God wants them to do this. But the problem is they don't do it properly. They're not respectful. They don't ask questions. They don't listen. And so they don't take advice at all at that age. So they push against, and they really will push hardest against the homeschool mom than they will against their dad, it seems like, because we're there all the time. And they see us. She actually does see you as an authority. And she hears you as an authority. So she's going to push harder at you because she feels like, in order for me to be heard, in order for me to achieve something in and of myself, I have to push you out of the way.
Yeah.
So this is definitely another one of those issues, like everything else that we teach in a large family or in a special needs family, that dealing with the heart issues and dealing with these little lessons, so much more important than the pre-algebra she's starting.
Yes. I love that answer because I've gone through it with every one of my kids, and I can hear it in your answer that you have too.
Oh my gosh. I had one boy that literally shook his fist. He would literally shake his fist and say, "I will not obey you." Oh my gosh. Wow. I am a very strong-willed person. I mean, that would send steam out my ears. So obviously he's strong-willed. I'm strong-willed. It was like World War III around here all the time. So that's another time that sometimes we need to know, Laura, when to step back and call a truce, or ceasefire, at least call a ceasefire and say, when dad comes home, we'll talk to him about this. Whether it's, we'll talk to him about this lesson. We'll talk to him about these chores. We'll just, we need a neutral third party to arbitrate this. And sometimes that really helps. I just gave up with him and said, I will give you your assignments. I will answer any questions. Whether or not you do them is between you and your dad. So I didn't have to be the bad guy anymore.
Yeah. My son, my middle one, ended up writing his own curriculum because we could not agree. And I said, fine, this is the law. If you can follow the law in our state and make it fit into what you want to do, his transcript will be accepted at no college. And he knew that, but he chose to do podcasting and all these other things. And yeah, so, but that was his high school. He covered all the subjects he needed to cover. And yeah, it's the relationship that matters the most with those children. And because if you lose your relationship with your older kids, you're going to lose everything with them. You know, that connection. It's again down to what you were talking about, Leanne. It's what matters most. What are we teaching here? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Well, Laura says thank you, ladies.
Welcome.
So I'd love for you to, before we wrap up, Leanne, to share some of your resources and how people can find you. I first have your book. You want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. And I have it right here next to me, actually. Awesome. I keep it on the shelf. Everything you need to know about homeschooling is a 600-page reference manual on answering literally every question. And it's not, don't get all scared of it. People get scared and say, I would never read that book. You're not supposed to read that book. I was so buggy. I wish I had a sticker to put on the front of it that said, do not read this book. It's just a reference work, and it's really easily, clearly laid out so you can quickly turn to whatever question you have. And there are huge sections on teaching multiple children and strategies and things you can do to help make that easier. And there's a whole chapter on special needs as well, with resources and information that you can take advantage of. So that's my biggest baby, is everything you need to know about homeschooling.
Yeah. And then you have a Facebook and
absolutely podcast. My Facebook group, Homeschool Made Easy. You can contact me directly through there. I always answer everything. And the podcast, it has the same name, Homeschool Made Easy. Just like this, you can come watch it, the interview live and ask your own questions every Thursday at 2 p.m. Central in the Homeschool Made Easy Facebook group. And you can find the podcast wherever you like to listen.
Very cool. And then you have a website too as well.
That's right. LAGarfias.com. There's a contact form right on there if you want to contact me. And that's where you can subscribe to my monthly e-magazine and find out more information and articles and help for your homeschool journey.
Awesome. Well, you got lots of resources and just so much wisdom. Thank you so much for sharing, Leanne. This was a treat.
You have such great listeners too. It's great to meet them.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to answer Creative Minds Homeschooling. Hey, what are you going to do with Spend Homeschool after this year? I'm still here. I'm just going to be done homeschooling. So don't worry. I'm going to be around. But Spend Homeschool is actually growing. I'm super excited about that. We are launching into doing family camps starting next year. In conjunction with Johnny and Friends, the ministry, we will be launching our first pilot camp in Minnesota in August of 2022. It'll be August 21st through the 26th, and we'll have some registrations up and information about that coming soon. So we're around, and I just hired a COO to join me in partnering and leading Sped Homeschool. She's going to help be growing our community outreach, and I'm going to be working more with our partners. So you'll see some big changes. We'll be launching communities and some more courses and webinars and those types of things as well. So you're in Minnesota. Awesome. Because this camp is going to be amazing. We're over the moon excited about this. I've already had some people coming in saying, well, can we do this? And we did it. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully the model for the camps that then we then release into other states. So anyways, that's, a lot about us as well and everything that's coming up, but, you can find out more at spedhomeschool.com. And so, Well, thank you so much, Leanne. This has been a joy. We got to meet in person last week and then get to talk about homeschooling live this week. So, and I'm looking forward to being on Leanne's show at the end of October.
Yes, that'll be great.
Yeah, very fun. So, all right. Well, next week we're hitting a new subject. So, for the month of October, we're going to be talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia. And with a whole bunch of different experts and people who have lived it themselves, we want to give you kind of the inside scoop too of what it's like to have some of those disabilities and maybe some advantages that go with them. So, so you want to stay tuned for those broadcasts in October. And so, we'll see you next week at the same time as we cover those. But thank you again, Leanne, and thank you for your time. And make sure you check out Leanne's resources. She's just amazing wealth of information, as you've just heard.
Thank you.
So you're welcome. All right. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you next week right here on Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
Jesus wants our fears to launch us toward faith. Then he grins and says, "Do you trust me? Because together, we can do this." With Mornings with Jesus, you can start your day in a positive way. Find hope through inspirational stories and scripture. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Mornings with Jesus. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.